The following episode of Curmudgeon's Corner was recorded a little over 12 hours before the news started leaking about the death of Osama bin Laden. So there's nothing in this podcast about that. I'm sure we'll talk about it next week. In the meantime, enjoy this episode of Curmudgeon's Corner. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, May 1st, 2011. I'm Sam Minter. I've got Yvonne Bo with me, who is starting to giggle and laugh because I was mentioning that Skype, I was looking for a window, and I mentioned that the UI on Skype 5 on the Mac sucks. Like, the functionality is all the same and it works, but they really screwed up the UI in Skype 5. And I've heard other people complain about this too. Oh, and by the way, Alex is with us.
Alex apparently doesn't like it too much either.
He got something stuck in his teeth. I gotcha. Anyway, I am currently on Skype 5.1.0. And okay. Yvonne, what are you on?
I don't know. Take a guess.
Are you more than a couple versions behind?
I am on 2.8.0851.
Oh, good job there.
So, yes, I'm just a little bit, just saying, behind. But you know, that's why you're telling me, oh, Skype 5. I'm like, 5? 5? I'm like, I mean, I don't recall getting prompted for updates recently, as far as like,
well, Alex has a mind of his own. He was playing with something, and now he wants something, and I'm not sure what he wants. How about this? No? Will that robot do? Okay.
I did hit the button that says, a new version of Skype is a check for updates, and it did tell me, yes, that there is a new version available.
I think it only does that within, like, when there's a major version, it won't do it.
Okay. I don't know. Well, anyway, let's just say I'm a little bit behind. It works fine.
Well, I would say no reason to upgrade as long as it's working fine for the moment. You know, because
yeah.
I mean, I think they added some new features in terms of like video chatting with multiple people and things like that. But you know, nothing that matters too much, and they screwed up the UI. I've heard some people complaining about this, saying that actually what happened was the Mac had a really good UI for Skype, and Windows had a fairly crappy UI, and so when they updated it, they decided to make the Mac version closer to the Windows version rather than the other way around.
Hmm.
But anyway. So, we have a plan for today. Unlike last week, where we sort of just punted and said, hey, we're both busy, we've got family stuff to deal with. We didn't even think about what we were talking about. We just blabbered for a few minutes and then screwed that up with some technical issues as well. We have a plan today. So, first of all, we're going to talk about that whole location brouhaha with the iPhone and Android and others keeping a log of cell towers you've been connected to and things along those lines. Because that was in the news last week, but we didn't talk about it. We are going to talk a little bit about Libya, specifically with regard to the recent airstrikes, at least as we're recording this, where some of Gaddafi's family was killed, apparently. And then Yvonne's going to do an economy update with all kinds of interesting things that happened lately. And then we'll end it up with talking a little bit about the birthers and the release of the birth certificate and all of that nonsense that also happened earlier this week. I think it was this week. I don't know. Everything melds together at this time. Let's start with the locations. Basically, this knowledge of this in certain areas had existed for a long time. Like, it was not a secret that this stuff was there, and if you were paying really close attention, you would have known it. I was not paying really close attention. So last week what happened is that some security-type researchers who knew about the details of these location files published a little app that you could run on your Mac that would basically show you a map of everywhere you'd been with your iPhone since sometime last year when apparently the feature was introduced. So, you know, I, of course, downloaded this and immediately shared my map because I was like, oh, man, this is cool. but a lot of people are very concerned about it because it, you know, it basically keeps your history. It kept it unencrypted. It was backed up to your computer so that basically anybody who had physical access to your phone or your computer could easily download this and get a track of where you've been. Now, it's important to point out that this is not like GPS level tracking that gets you down to a few feet. This is like what cell towers you were connected with, which sometimes are right next to you, but sometimes could even be a couple miles away, depending on where you're going and the relative strength of signals and all that kind of nonsense. I guess in the end, Apple announced that, you know, it was supposed to be there for various reasons of caching your location so that location-aware applications could very quickly come up and start doing stuff even before they had a good fix on you. But that there was, it was keeping way more history than it should have. It basically wasn't deleting the history, I gather. And so in a subsequent update, they'll be changing it so it only keeps a week of history. And that was Apple's response so far. So,
but you know, my whole thing about, you know, about this is that, you know, the cell phone carriers have always, I mean, let's face it, forget about this information.
Yep.
All the carriers track where the hell you are.
Well, so
right now,
right. So the
I mean, there are so many reasons how you get tracked right now with your phone. I mean, the only way not to get tracked is not to have one.
Right. I mean, now, just the difference here, of course, is yes, the carriers keep that information, but at least in theory, in order for anybody to get access to that warrant, they have to go through a proper legal process, whatever that proper legal process is. Whereas for the file on your phone and on your computer, you know, if you lose your phone in a bar, somebody can find out everywhere you've been. Or if your friend, you know, or let's say a worst case scenario.
Your spouse grabs your phone and they can
your
go,
spouse
like,
thinks you're cheating on you. They grab your phone. They check this out. They find out you've been spending a lot of time at your girlfriend's house.
I'm at the strip club or something or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, but I mean.
Yeah.
You know.
That's the concern here. Now, I looked at it and said, oh, well, you know, big freaking deal. Of course, everything's tracked. But, you know, this is a cultural shift that a lot of people still aren't used to or whatever. And, yeah, they probably should have at least had some sort of option. See, I look at this and, like, make it a feature. Make it so that, like, you can go into a little Where Have I Been app and show a cool little map. But give people the option to turn it off. And I understand the need to sort of cache, you know, your last location or maybe your last couple of locations. But there probably isn't a really strong need to keep that long-term cache that they had going. Now, one interesting thing in the statement that Apple put out, they did note that they are tracking various location-related information for purposes of building a traffic database for a future traffic project, which is kind of cool. But, you know, I had a really hard time getting worked up about this, you know?
So did I. I had a hard time because I guess that my expectation was already that with my cell phone, that if I have a cell phone turned on, I can be tracked everywhere I'm going.
Right.
There's just, you know, the only way not to be tracked is not to have one. That's it.
I think that's very true. Like I said, I guess it is a significant difference, though, being does the, you know, Does the wireless carrier
know? Expectation of the privacy of my location if I'm carrying a cell phone, I guess.
Right, but
so the fact that it was being gathered in one way or another, it was stored on the phone itself. You know, so it was stored at the okay, so it's stored on the phone versus being stored at you know, at AT&T.
Right.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, look at what happened with a Sony hack in the last week and a half, which we
isn't on our list
with the PlayStation Network.
Yeah. I mean, and they're just the latest. I mean, there have been over the last year, 2 years. It seems like every couple months there's a report of a major data leak somewhere.
Yeah. And also there was a major, you know, data outage at some company that I don't want to name now.
These things happen.
Yes.
And it's unfortunate, and I'm sure over time, you know, companies are going to get more and more aware and better at guarding against these things. But, like, there was one company a few weeks ago who lost lists of email addresses. And it was an email service provider that serviced many, many, many companies. And how did that leak happen? It wasn't somebody, somehow hacking in mysteriously. It was what they call, there are different names for it. But basically, it was someone calling up pretending to be IT or something and saying, can you give me your password? Something along those lines. And breaking in through that kind of social engineering where you basically trick somebody into giving you the keys. And that's always good. No matter what you do in terms of technological protections, you're always going to have that possibility, you know? And
yeah,
so,
very much.
I don't know. But to me, I do understand the difference of, you know, it being off at some big company that actually has processes around things to being something where, you know, if you leave your phone or in this case your computer unattended for more than a few minutes, someone could theoretically grab it, plug it in, figure this stuff out. And actually, before we move off this topic, one of the things that came up after this is, you know, some of what they call the mobile forensic tools that exist out there that theoretically are only available to law enforcement. That basically allow you to plug the phone in, and in like 10-15 minutes, it'll suck in everything off the phone. You know, entire history of text messages, your calling history, voicemails that you may have, the location history that we've been talking about, basically everything that you can imagine you kept on your phone or happened on your phone can be sucked off that sucker. And
I mean, I was just yesterday. I got my wife a new. A week ago, I tried to get her an iPhone 4. There was a error with my billing at AT&T that made me that I couldn't do so without going to an AT&T store. So I went yesterday, which luckily coincided with the fact that they finally had white iPhones.
Oh, did you get a white one?
For my wife.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, I have a white iPhone myself. We both have white iPhones.
Right.
But the one thing is that, but she was like, I mean, one of the reasons originally I'd waited on getting an iPhone 4 was because I wanted a white one, okay? Now, it's all, by coincidence, you know, it was unplanned because she was like last week, fuck it, I don't care, I'll get a black one. I actually didn't care. But they had the white one and I picked it up. So I was backing up her stuff from one phone to the other. I realize all the information that is stored on the phone.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, before, when you had an older phone, maybe you had a few missed calls, your contacts, or whatever, that's it. But shit, I mean, you've got the text message history that you've got since, like, I don't know when, for God's sake.
No.
There is so much stuff that stays on right now.
Absolutely.
I mean, and anybody can grab a phone and they can find out so much shit about you.
Well, and yes, I know, Alex. No more of that right now.
Your pictures, your calling history, your location. I mean, shit, we'll talk about the locations. You know, hell, they could go through your locations a little bit. You know, they start going through, like, your Google Maps where you searched or whatever, and they can figure out what places you've been.
Yeah. No, and I'll point out that even though, you know, this full tool... Hey, come here. Supposedly only accessible to law enforcement. You can get something fairly syllable.
Yes, I know.
There's an application called PhoneView that I actually have. That's intended purpose is to back up all that stuff for you personally, so that you get on your computer sort of a browsable archive of your text messages and things like that. But theoretically, you can plug somebody else's phone into that sucker too and get the same thing.
Yeah.
And I forget if it's a free app or if it's like $20 or something, but it's not like expensive. You know, yeah, all this information is there. I mean, that's the bottom line. You have it, you use it, you have your phone, and therefore there's this big collection of information in a small box in your pocket. And if someone gets access to that small box, they potentially have access to information. And yes, you can put a passcode on it and all that kind of stuff, and that'll slow people down. But if for someone who really knows what they're doing, they could still get in. You know? So.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we killed that topic. Let's take a break, and we will be right back with Libya. We'll be back in a minute, and Alex, will you come down? Yeah, I know. Okay, we'll be back in just a second.
What do you get when two housewives produce an online poetry journal? Poems celebrating dishwater, breastfeeding, and lunar phases? Quick trips to the pool boy? Maybe. But they like to believe they offer much more than that. There's no telling what you'll get at the No-Tell Motel. But I hear sneaking out and keeping everything hush-hush is kind of sexy. And they're hot for discretion. Having it all keeps our two housewives awfully busy. So they like to stop and smell the posies. Spend quality time with their poets. Which is why their rendezvous lasts a full 7 days. A new poem each weekday. Each year they slip their room key to 52 poets and indulge in 260 poems. Their spouse's misfortunes are your gains. Meet with them daily at notelmotel.org. They'll be in room 5C, sipping the latest cocktail recommended in Martha Stewart's Living, Scribbling Marginalia.
Okay, we are back. Libya. We haven't talked about Libya in a few weeks, really. I guess as we're recording this, the big news is sometime within the last 24 hours, there was a NATO strike on a complex that on a building that apparently I keep wanting to say Saddam Hussein, but it's not Saddam Hussein. It's
not Saddam.
It's Muammar Gaddafi. Where he theoretically was, and apparently his youngest son and a bunch of his grandkids were killed, at least according to a statement issued by the Libyan government. I have seen some reports that there's some doubts as to how much of it is true, not necessarily whether or not the son was killed, but whether or not Gaddafi himself was actually there when it happened.
Okay.
And apparently also there were some reports that we also hit a building that housed a school for children with Down syndrome. I haven't heard the story behind that one yet, whether there was a military target elsewhere in the building. Apparently there were no kids there because it was the weekend, though. But
okay.
But anyway, so... I don't know. I have theoretically here, we are not explicitly targeting Gaddafi or his family. However, any location where command and control is happening is a legitimate target. And what is command and control? It's Gaddafi picking up the phone and telling somebody to do something. So therefore, any building where Gaddafi actually issues any orders becomes a target. Therefore, he's kind of a target, despite what
right.
you know, what whatever words you use.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know. It all just seems like if what you're really after is what they said they were after from the very beginning, which is just keep people out of – just keep the battle from – affecting civilians in some of these cities, that you should be able to do that primarily by, you know, attacking things that are actually sort of on the front lines, where the forces are. I understand how command and control is related, but it seems like it's an escalation, although we've been doing it from the beginning, to actively be targeting, you know, Gaddafi and company. And again, theoretically, we're not, and they put out a statement, we don't target individuals, blah, blah, blah. But come on. You know, if you don't target an individual, but you target the fact that he's issuing commands, it's the same fucking thing.
Well, when you're throwing that many, lobbing that many bombs around, I mean, let's face it. I mean, you know, you're liable to wind up dropping one where the hell he is.
Well, yeah.
I mean, even if you weren't actively trying.
And, you know, it just... And I know this is what war is and war happens, but, you know, I get this. It's like, how can it possibly improve our cause to be killing off grandkids who may or may not have, probably, have absolutely nothing to do with Jack? You know, and...
I totally understand. I just don't know if we were actively targeting those, I guess. That's my point.
I'm sure Obama didn't wake up in the morning and say, today let's target the guy's grandkids. Okay?
Right. That's why I'm like... I mean, if we're going to be at war, this is the kind of shit that is liable to happen.
Yeah, well, and I'm just, you know... it just comes back to me, and like this whole thing seems like somewhat of a, you know, where what's the actual goal here? What are we doing? I've heard the explanation.
I'm not clear about that right now, to be honest with you.
You know, I heard the explanations before, but you know, our actions and our words don't seem to be aligned. It's unclear. I don't know. It just seems like. If our goal was to stop, like, you know, a major bloodbath right at the beginning of this, okay, done.
We have accomplished that.
We did that. Now, of course, if we pull out entirely now, maybe it would still happen, and so we have to be there. But again, there's the we have to be there forever thing, or until Gaddafi's dead. So therefore, we're trying to kill him, you know, whether we call it that or not, you know?
Right. Right.
And it just seems... I don't know. I am...
Messy?
I am not happy with the way these things are continuing to progress, you know?
I'm just a little bit like... I don't understand what the fuck we're trying to do now.
Mm-hmm. You want a different pen?
I mean, I'm just not sure. I mean, I really am not. You know, that's my problem right now. So... I mean, I don't know if we can achieve some clarity at this moment.
I think this is, we talked right when this first started that I think, you know, Obama was sort of counting on the fact that this would be over quickly. Well, guess what? It's not.
Not.
And you know, I'm sure there were some people telling him that, you know, this will be over in a week. You know, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, this was not hard to predict as a serious possibility either. I mean, we talked about it at the very beginning.
That's right.
And you know, obviously we don't have access to all of the intelligence and all of the details on, you know, what is really going on. But still, I mean, this was eminently predictable.
Right.
And... It's one of those where it's like even in like Afghanistan and Iraq now, we have some sort of vision towards, you know, what's the way out. I mean, it's sort of hard, but in Libya,
but we've got right
in Libya. I'm not so sure. Well, I guess we do. The only vision here is, you know, eventually, you know,
a collapse of the regime.
Eventually, Gaddafi leaves, is killed, or dies. You know, but
I
now,
guess.
But now, yeah, you know, now it starts sounding like what our Cuba policy was for decades. You know, I don't know. It just seems like a mess to me. I understand the humanitarian motivations for getting in the first place, but I don't know.
I don't know how the fuck. I agree with you. I don't know how the fuck we get out right now. What's the end game here? I don't think anybody's got a good answer for it.
No, I agree. I don't think they do. I think this is, gonna just continue. And even let's say Gaddafi does die, either through us or something else, or he runs off into exile. What happens to Libya after that is by no means clear.
That's right. I mean, look at Iraq, for God's sakes.
Yeah, and this potentially looks, even worse. I don't know. It's a complete mess. I think we're, at the very least, we need to be very, very careful about things. And, just random. And I actually haven't seen a report yet on how old these grandkids are. I mean, it may well be that the grandkids are in their 30s and are active participants in the.
Yeah, we're thinking about babies, exactly. I don't know.
But still, it's not the press kind of press you need. Yes, I know, Alex. It's not the kind of press you need. I don't know. Anything else to say about Libya, or should we go ahead and break and come back on something else?
I don't think we got anything else to say about Libya. I think we just should take a break.
Okay. The only thing I'll mention is we won't have a real conversation about it. But over the last few weeks, Syria has been escalating quite a bit as well. And Yemen has also been escalating quite a bit as well. And so interesting things happening all over still. Okay, we'll take a break. This will be your poem of the week. Enjoy your poem, and we'll be back right after this. Are you going to enjoy your poem, Alex? Okay.
All right.
We'll be back after this.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
Come, Our Lady Before Our Lord, by Joe Hall. The soul is a braid of mating snakes. And what are snakes? Madonna, Immaculate Heart of Mary, heroism lies only in death. Hence, there is no need to inquire into the martyr's previous life. That's Pope Pius IX. Subject line, Musik. Subject line, no subject. Subject line, I miss you. What's the soul, impossible outcome? A game piece's button head? A body so broken it's unbreakable, without orifice? I'm so happy to speak to you.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Back.
Okay, here we are. Yvonne, you mentioned that a lot was going on with the economy in the last week or two, and we haven't talked about it in a while. I'll mention the only thing that I really noticed about it is that the last week, for the first time in forever, I paid more than $4 a gallon for gas.
Well, yeah, so that's one thing, but that's been happening for a little while, like in my neck of the woods. One thing is that Ben Bernanke actually had a press conference,
which never happens, right?
It happened right after the Federal Reserve meeting, which is not usual at all. Usually, most of these Fed meetings happen, and then a press release is issued, and there's no questions, follow up. But Ben Bernanke this time decided that for the first time they're going to have a press conference and go over a number of questions. They held the press conference, and a lot of people, basically he didn't say anything that fucked up. Okay, he didn't, so I guess that was one of the standard burrs, whether he would say something that would panic the market,
So he had a press conference, but he basically didn't say anything, right?
Basically, stuck to the themes that he has been talking about. And in some of the questions, I think that the main concern that people, a number of came out is to the problem of gas. And then it comes down to inflation. Because this week, a number of manufacturers, specifically consumer packaged goods people, so like Procter & Gamble, announced that because of upward pressure in costs, for things like transportation, other things, that they were going to have to start passing through price increases,
Mm-hmm.
you know, and you think about it, that in an economy which is still not in recovery, and manufacturers still pressure to bring up prices, even though we've got a lot of slack capacity in the economy, we certainly are not near full employment or anything.
Right.
And people started getting really concerned about where the heck we're going with the economy right now because of the situation. People are concerned about the fact that, you know, the Federal Reserve has been helicoptering money. And, you know, that this is part of a driver of inflation. The fact that they're not trying to raise interest rates. But yet, on the flip side, okay, if you do raise interest rates right now and we've got unemployment at such a high rate, what the hell are we going to – I mean, what are we going to accomplish with that? We'll probably just slow down the economy anyway. Now, granted – here's one thing that came out from another – aside from the fact that Procter & Gamble and these guys were saying that because of higher input costs, they're going to have to raise prices. The other thing that also came to light was that you know, we're having a problem with banks that even though rates are super low, people are not going to are not borrowing money. It's right. Not a thing of like – you've got a combination of banks being tighter with the standards, but you've also got a combination of people not asking for money. So you've got record low rates, and yet people don't want to borrow money. So
yeah, it's I know I'm certainly in this position. You know, we got a loan for the car we bought a few months back. But other than that, like – we haven't put anything new on our credit cards in a long time. There was one thing, but generally we pay it off like the month after when we do add something. We're paying down our debt from before still, but you know there's a definite reluctance there and says, you know, after all this happened, maybe we should just live off what we actually have directly and not be taking loans for stuff.
And that's what a lot of people are doing. And that's one of the reasons why the economy all of a sudden is not like recovering like it has in previous instances. And so if you drive up rates even further, well, then that's going to increase the reluctance of people to borrow money and go out.
Right.
It's a situation where we've got inflation pressure on one end. Okay. Then the Fed is like saying, well, okay, one of the counters to inflation is to raise rates. The problem is people are not borrowing money right now. If we raise rates even more, they're going to borrow even less.
Right.
And so where the hell do you – I don't see a good any good choices right now in the matter. So the Fed is choosing right now to just, okay, basically just not raise rates. Just keep them where they are. And they said that they were going to stop their program of quantitative easing, which is basically buying bonds on the open market, which is basically going out in the open market and just buying anything up in order to make sure there was liquidity in the market.
Right.
Okay, so they're going to ease that up. But I don't know. Honestly, we're in a situation right now where people are concerned as to where we are heading right now, given that stimulus is going to be taken out. Okay. I was reading a little bit today. Let me see where the heck the article was that I was looking at a little bit earlier on Barron's, where we had one person that said, you know, there's a person, Lacey Hunt is the name of the person, longtime Fed watcher at Hoisington Investment Management in Austin. She sized up monetary policy this way. If the objective of quantitative easing too were to raise interest rates, slow economic growth, encourage speculation, eviscerate the standard of living of the average American family, then it has been enormously successful. I mean, now I will say this, that I think that this person is weighing way too much of the blame on Fed policy on this.
Mm-hmm.
If you go like right now, the rise in interest rates barely rose. They rose maybe half a point. So that's not really true. Slow economic growth. Look, the slow economic growth has a lot to do with the fact that I think the people just aren't borrowing money. Okay,
right.
And spend. Okay, so that's got second one. Now, C, I will say this: the fact that there's been that much cheap money sloshing around has certainly encouraged a number of people to speculate. Okay,
right.
And I think that's one of the reasons why commodity prices are going up. So the question is right now whether if you stop quantitative easing, whether that will reduce the amount of speculation. Who knows? And in terms of inflation, I mean, I will tell you this, that the talk about the standard of living, the average American family, which is through inflation, I think that more than Fed policy right now helping with that, probably the biggest helper would be to do something over the long term to cut the federal deficit. Would
right, but any changes there, right, will have would be it's not that kind of change wouldn't be an immediate effect for the most part, right? That would be like years down the line.
It would be years down the line. But however, the thing is that people are talking about how the dollar has been dropping last year. So the record low right now in the last 3 years.
Uh huh.
Now you got to remember that we are not the most indebted country in the world. Like Japan or a lot of the Eurozone, we still have a lower level of government debt. I think the dollar drop has been more in speculation of where the debt is going in the future, not what we have right now. But if we go and we put in a plan that says in 10 years we will achieve this with debt, that would probably push the dollar up, okay? And so therefore do some curtailment of inflation. But we'll see. I mean, I don't see – the problem is that people think that it's all like so easy, and I'm like right now given the situation we're in, I don't see any good options right now, to be honest with you. I mean, you do any choices that you have in front of you right now, I mean, they're going to have – I mean, it's not good. So I don't know. So that's where we're at right now. Obviously, you know, there's been a lot of talk in Washington about the deficit, a lot of back and forth, a lot of discussion in public, a lot of brouhaha, especially about the Medicare proposal and all this stuff.
Right.
Quite a lot of smoke, not a lot of fire. Haven't seen anybody really still put something concrete, really, that you know. I mean, other than the Ryan proposal, I mean, I know that the administration did a lot of talk, but I still haven't seen a proposal, really, to be laid down on the table. Now, they did say that they were going to push a crunch right now in terms of trying to do something because of the reluctance of people to raise the federal debt ceiling right now, mm-hmm. which is coming up really soon.
Since you brought up the federal debt ceiling, I did want to ask one question that's been on my mind, and I think I know the answer, but I'd like to hear what you have to say about it. People keep saying that if the federal debt ceiling is not raised, then when we hit that ceiling, we will have to default on our interest payments, and we're defaulting on our bonds, and that would be an absolute disaster. Isn't there another option that may also be just as much of a disaster, but is stop spending as much, you know, by like 40%? If I hit my credit limit, it doesn't mean I default on my credit card. It means I have to stop buying shit.
Here's a problem that you're going to wind up at. The problem is that we've got – okay, we authorized spending by the government. However, we didn't authorize borrowing, right?
Right.
So it's not like – we did not tell federal agencies to stop spending by 40%. So they got to keep on spending. However, the Treasury doesn't have the authority to borrow any money. So, I guess what they're saying is that the only option,
given how big
the slice of debt is of our payments, the only thing that happens is that we wind up in default.
There are those obligations no matter what. I think it's that the people just assume the choice is, you know, it's easier to stop paying the interest than it is to say, essentially do a government shutdown again.
I think here's the problem. The agencies will not stop spending because they're authorized to spend. However, the Treasury is the one that...
But it happens all the time that the executive doesn't spend money that's authorized to be spent. Yeah, sure. So it is an option. It would probably be a painful option. I mean, we're talking about not sending benefit checks and shutting down major parts of the government and basically everything that people were talking about with a government shutdown,
well,
except more so.
I think you're right. It's not the only option is the default, but it would probably inevitably be one of the things that would happen.
And isn't there another option of just print a crapload more money?
Yes, there is. The Federal Reserve could go in and just start scooping up, those treasuries. that are maturing at the time. Yes, we're just fucking printing money. I mean, fire up the printing presses, baby.
So my point is just everybody talks about like default is the only option. It seems like there actually are several options. Now all of the options suck. I won't deny that, and all of them would probably be absolutely devastating to our economy, but there are different ways to devastate the economy, and I suppose what everybody's saying is that the interest rate, the interest payments are, politically everybody agrees they're the first to go, or for all I know, maybe there's actually a law in place that says if this scenario happens, the first thing to stop has to be the interest payments.
Yep. It probably is the easiest and quickest, because usually what happens is, you know, the Treasury goes out and does these weekly auctions of bonds, and those auctions are the ones that are used to usually like roll over debt that's coming due right now. Right. And, you know, they wouldn't have the authority to do one of those auctions. So we're done. We're out.
Right.
So that's that. So. Anyway, all right. That's pretty much all I had about the economy. So
okay,
I figured we hadn't talked about it for a while. We could catch up a little bit.
Let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back talking about the birthers and Obama's release of the birth certificate and all that kind of stuff. We'll be right back.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620, and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on, baby.
Let's do the twist. Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
I hit the radio dial and tune it up all the way.
I got a dancing in the moonlight.
Classic music for a classic American town. AM 1620. And in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, the Valley.
Okay, we are back.
We are back.
So there's just been, you know, basically, there've been a bunch of nut jobs ever since, you know, 2008, going on about how Obama isn't actually qualified to be president because it's a lie that he was born in Hawaii.
Well, let me ask one question, okay? Which I started thinking about the other day. Say Obama had been born outside the U.S., but the both parents being U.S. citizens.
Yes.
Does that mean that he's not qualified?
I've been looking that up a little bit, and I think that's unclear. I think they would probably be fine. Well, like, McCain was actually an example of this. McCain was born in the Panama Canal Zone.
Right. Okay.
But he theoretically was born on a military base, although there's been some dispute that maybe he went to a local hospital that wasn't on the military base, and that actually changes the legalities of it somewhat. But the law that passed that allowed the McCain case to be considered a natural-born citizen was passed after he was born. So just to clarify it, Congress actually, during 2008, explicitly passed a law clarifying McCain's situation to say, yes, he's eligible to run for president. The bottom line is, the actual words of the Constitution and the laws that help implement this part of things are not 100% clear by what they mean. So that it really, if there was a border case, it would almost certainly go to court, and it would almost certainly get escalated, and somebody would, some court would decide whether or not the eligibility occurred. Although there's also questions of standing and who is able to actually like bring that case to court, and whether or not it can be done before the election. So there's a lot of weird stuff here. Like, you know, it seems like if somebody's ineligible, it would be better to catch that before they're actually elected. You know, if you look up, natural born citizen on Wikipedia,
what does it mean in the Constitution when it says natural born citizen?
Right.
Persons who are born within the jurisdiction of a national government, i.e. in its territorial limits, or those born of citizens temporarily residing abroad.
Right, and so there's the weirdness in Obama's situation, because for a while I was like, what would it matter?
It wouldn't have made a difference if he was born in Kenya.
Apparently it did, because since only one of his parents was a U.S. citizen, it becomes more complicated.
Okay.
And it depends on the residency status of the non-citizen parent.
Okay.
And some other stuff like that. Yeah, because
but
yeah.
Even still, you could argue that even if he was born outside, because he was born to a U.S. citizen, you could still make the argument. It wouldn't be as clear cut, obviously, but you know, you could still make an argument, I guess.
So the summary on Wikipedia is here for Barack Obama specifically. They have a section on you know, presidential candidates whose eligibility has been questioned. And
would
so that,
I be eligible to be president?
So,
there we go.
Yes, you would.
Actually, I've had people argue to me that in Puerto Rico that the answer is no.
So that used to be true, apparently. Like, read the Wikipedia page on natural born citizen clause. It actually mentions Puerto Rico somewhere on it. But at least I think it did when I glanced over it before.
Okay.
But let's see, the people who are disputed here: Chester A. Arthur, the 21st president of the United States; Christopher Schuman, who was in the primaries in 1896; Charles Evan Hughes, who was in the election of 1916; Barry Goldwater, now getting into because he was born in the Arizona Territory before it was a state; George Romney, who is Mitt Romney's father, who ran for the Republican Party in 1968, was born in Mexico to U.S. parents. Anyway, Lowell Weicker was born in Paris to U.S. citizens. And then, of course, John McCain, and there's a really long bit on John McCain, because apparently his case was actually very interesting in terms of the details. Wait up, Alex. Here, destroy this. So I just gave him a folder full of papers that he's now distributing all over the room.
Wow.
Okay, so the Barack Obama part. Let me read this. This is off Wikipedia, off the Natural Born Citizen Clause page.
Okay, I'm looking at it over here where you were mentioning about myself. It says here, current U.S. law defines numerous other categories of individuals born abroad, as well as people born in most U.S. territories and professions, as being national and citizens of the United States at birth. Okay.
Right.
All right, so there you go. All right, good.
So there are apparently a couple U.S. territories.
Let's start my campaign!
There you go. Barack Obama, 44th president of the United States, was born in Honolulu, Hawaii, to a U.S. citizen mother and a British subject father from what was then the Kenya colony of the United Kingdom, which became the independent country of Kenya in 1963. Before and after the 2008 presidential election, arguments were made that he is not a natural-born citizen. On June 12, 2008, the Obama presidential campaign launched a website to counter what it described as smears by his opponents, including conspiracy theories challenging his eligibility. The most prominent issue raised against Obama was the claim made in several lawsuits that he was not actually born in Hawaii. In two other lawsuits, the plaintiffs argued that it was irrelevant whether he was born in Hawaii, but urged instead that he was nevertheless not a natural-born citizen because his citizenship status at birth was governed by the British Nationality Act of 1948. The relevant courts have either denied all applications or declined to render a judgment due to lack of jurisdiction. Some of the cases have been dismissed because of the plaintiff's lack of standing. On July 28, 2009, Hawaii Health Director Dr. Fukino issued a statement saying, "I've seen the original vital records maintained on file by the Hawaii State Department of Health, verifying Barack Hussein Obama was born in Hawaii and is a natural-born American citizen." On April 27, 2011, the White House released a copy of President Obama's long-form birth certificate. Anyway, the whole thing is here, this was brought on by Trump. You know, this has been going on for years, but in the last few weeks, Donald Trump has been going on and on about this. As
part
he's exploring running
he's
for president.
He's going to send. I am going to send my investigators to investigate.
Yes, and you know, some news operations sent their investigators to Hawaii to ask if any of Donald Trump's folks had been there, and nobody had. But anyway, you know, Donald Trump, whatever, you know. So there was a lot of speculation in terms of the timing of the release. You know, was Obama releasing at this time just to make Trump look like a fool? But then
if it didn't work very well.
But then Trump comes on and says, "See, you know, I made Obama release his documentation. What took it so long? Blah blah blah." Yeah, wait just a few more minutes. And yes, I know. Anyway, so he so Trump actually probably invigorates like his people because of this. So of course people were saying, well, maybe Obama's playing the tricky game here where he's making the Republican crazies even more likely to win, you know, so that he'll have an easier time in 2012. You know, I don't know that any of this is all that complicated. But you know, there's also people saying that the timing was due to the fact that WikiLeaks was about to release the stuff on Gitmo, and he wanted to distract from that. So who knows what the timing is? But it's amazing to me that so many people are still like all worked up about, you know, he's not a Hawaiian, he's a Muslim, he was born in Kenya, he's no American. And you know, it's like all of this is like, I can't say that 100% all of the people, you know, feel the same way, but come on, this seems like thinly veiled excuses to try to be like, you know, he's not one of us, you know. And
yes,
I'm not saying it's like necessarily 100% a racist thing, but maybe. I mean, because it seems like, you know, anybody rational looks at this evidence and says, there's nothing here. Of course he's a citizen. Of course he's eligible. There's absolutely nothing going on here. And it seems like the people who want to, like, cling to this have to have other reasons why they're clinging to this.
I mean, they have to be, because, I mean, even, like, somebody mentioned, like, you know, they talked about the newspaper, how it published that he was born, all the newspapers published
and there are even people talking about the thing he released last week was photoshopped.
They placed the fake advertisement back then, and then, you know, of course, it even comes out, find out later that that's not even, like, people don't publish those. They used to come out of the newspaper. The demographic registry sent out the birth announcements, and only the people that were actually registered would get a birth announcement sent to the newspaper to publish. Okay, so right. It wasn't even like in the power of anybody to send it, other than the, you know, the demographic registry to send that out.
Right.
So it's just, you know, every freaking theory. I mean, you can see how there is just impossible. And like, you know, like I've said this before to some people, you know, to some people, they will not let get in the evidence of the, get in the middle of their opinion. I mean, they will not. So, you know, whatever. This will probably keep going on, because the facts are irrelevant to these people, only their opinions are, and they're using this just basically because they just don't like the guy, because they're racist, because he's a Democrat. You can pick any of all the damn reasons that you want, okay?
Right. I mean, I don't know. It's never going to go away. I mean, like I mentioned, you know, while you were talking a second ago, there are people going on about how what was released this week is a fake, you know?
Right.
And they did not do themselves a favor. They actually released it in a PDF format that the way the compression worked made it look like there were parts altered. They should have just released a high-resolution picture. But, you know, whatever. You know, there are easy explanations for all this stuff, and it's been proved time and time again before. The fact that anything is being released now, you know, this was proven to the full satisfaction of anybody who was actually rational about it in 2008, you know? You know, so there's nothing here to be seen. And it's the fact that he engaged with it, you got to think there's some sort of political calculation about that, about why and when and how, but you know, whatever. Really, Alex, is it that upsetting? I know, birthers are stupid. Okay. Anything else to say about that?
No, let's just please try to see if we can not talk about this again.
Okay. Well, we'll wrap it up, and you know, apologies if Alex made it a little hard to hear. His mom needed a little extra sleep this morning. So, anyway, that's it for Curmudgeon's Corner this week. Email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com if you have any questions, comments, thoughts. Tell your friends to listen and tune in again next week. Can you say goodbye, Alex? Say goodbye to Yvonne. Now you're going to be quiet.
Bye. He's quiet.
Okay.
Okay, there he goes. All right.
Okay, bye everybody. Have a good week. We'll talk to you next week. Later.
Bye-bye.